Here's what's coming up on today's show.
I mean, you could be in great physical shape. That doesn't mean you couldn't, you know, tear your ACL or, you know, or blow out an Achilles.
Right.
You didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but you had a bad outcome in the short term. And that's a really good lesson out of that.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brett Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Well, hello and welcome in to the Retirement Cafe. Glad to have you. You know, Theodore Roosevelt once said, "The more you know about the past, the better prepared you are for the future." Every year, the market has a way of reminding us of lessons taught in previous years. And today, we want to spend a little time on that, talking about what the market taught us in 2022. I know it taught us quite a bit because there was a lot of lessons, I think, to be learned last year, guys. And it sounds like there's going to be some great information today. Did you guys put this list together?
No, we didn't. We did this show very similar. I think we broke it down into two different episodes last year. Larry Swedrow, who's the chief research officer of Buckingham Strategic Wealth, and a member of our investment policy committee, put this list together. He does it every year. So it's just good information to look at and review each year and kind of look back at the lessons that we were taught. And you're right. There's a lot of lessons, some tough ones in 2022 for sure.
Yeah. And Larry's fantastic. He's written several books. One that Brent and I like a lot was a little more recent was Your Complete Guide to a Successful and Secure Retirement. And he's a very interesting guy. We've had lunch with him. He's just thinks things out. Like he doesn't react to things. He's just a really great source of knowledge. So we tap into his observations every year because they're great.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a national speaker. He's made a lot of appearances. You've probably seen him on, you know, NBC, CNBC, CNN, you know, he's been on all those different television programs and things like that. So he's a wealth of knowledge and we really love his insights.
Yeah. You know, it's shocking that they have him on because he's so reasonable. Yeah. Like media doesn't like reasonable. Yes. Like they like, you know, the Kramers of the world, the shock and awe, you know, that yell and make these crazy predictions. He's definitely not that. And I think it's one of the reasons we enjoy reading and listening to him.
That's funny. Yeah. Reasonable doesn't sell advertising.
It doesn't
seem like. So, well, listen, as we go through this today, remember you can always find everything online, averywealth.com. And if you want to call Dan and Brent directly over to Avery Wealth to talk about the market or to talk about anything within your financial and retirement plan, you can always do that at 517-783-1695. So, guys, why do you think this is an important topic to hit on today?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, we believe, and you've probably heard us if you've been listening to the podcast for long, kind of an evidence-based approach to investing and really with everything around planning. And so, you know, and not reactive, right, Brent?
Right, yeah, like just a couple of points that what we think about when we think of evidence-based investing. So it's long-term market history versus near-term market forecasting. So a lot of times you hear people, this is what's going to happen. Well, yeah. Let's look at what's happened over long periods of time. You know, we want to look at peer-reviewed academic evidence versus like some so-called expert opinion.
Yeah, which they're everywhere. Like right. The opinions, like, and that's what's so interesting with how our media has grown over the past several years where everybody has a voice. What happens is like there's this like a craving for content, right?
Right.
So like anybody and everybody becomes an expert because they need to fill the time.
Right.
Right. And yep. So what we find is a lot of that doesn't play out well over time. A lot of those hitting opinions, right?
Yeah. And, you know, practical investment strategies versus speculative strategies. And then, you know, just patience in participating in the market versus like, yeah, I think you already mentioned, you know, like reacting to something.
Yeah.
Just like this rapid reaction. Oh, we have to do something right now to fix this.
Yeah.
Right?
Which I mean, it sounds easy.
Yeah.
Like the thing is, when you think about evidence-based investing and really structure, patience, discipline, you know, part of the reason we like to go through this is because what you find is over long periods of time, historically, it works, but it doesn't make it easy.
Right.
It's hard a lot of times because we feel like we should do other things, right? And so, you know, what we want to do is we want to learn from 2022, learn from history, you know, don't sit there and try to like guess what's going to be a good strategy moving forward.
Right. Because, and we'll talk about this. We're going to talk about five different lessons. There's more in his article, but we picked out five of them. And what we know is a lot of the years, these same lessons have been taught, right? It's not anything new, but they're just maybe not so subtle reminders sometimes.
It's like heat of the battle. So it's like if you know, West Point, like the greatest generals in the world, they do, what do they call them, war games or whatever. So they look at all these different scenarios. So when they get in the heat of the battle, they've already thought about what's the best way to approach something, right? Unfortunately, with money, a lot of times in the heat of the battle, we don't take that approach, right? We react.
Yeah, and that's why you want to set it up ahead of time and have, you know, history on your side and know it ahead of time, because when we're in our right frame of mind, it's easy to see those things. Mm-hmm. But when something has gone wrong, well, then emotions start to take over and we can make some mistakes. So it's always good to look back at these things.
All right, let's go through some of the lessons then today from 2022. What's the first lesson the market taught us?
Well, lesson number one is just because something hasn't happened doesn't mean it can't or it won't happen.
Yeah, are you talking about the Lions winning the Super Bowl?
Listen, that might be an outlier. I'm not sure. Although they're getting better. I mean, come on, we got to have hope here. So 2022 was a surprise for a lot of people because it's the first time that the S&P 500 and the 20-year treasury bonds experienced double-digit declines in the same year. Yeah. So that had never happened before, right? And so it took a lot of people by surprise that thought that it couldn't happen, right?
Yep. Typically, just to kind of, understand that a little deeper, the whole idea historically has been, if the market tanks, long-term bonds are going to go up.
Yep.
Right? But we had a unique year this year with rising rates, right? So how bad did it get?
Well, the S&P 500 was down 18.1%, and long-term treasuries lost 26.1%.
So the supposedly safe investment lost more than the market in a bad market year.
Yes. Yep. So that, I mean, it does make it very, very challenging, you know, for really even a lot of retirees, right? Because some people are, you know, that are, if you're not super diversified and if your bonds weren't real safe, which we would call like shorter term bonds, you could really be hurt by this event.
Yeah. And basically it's only happened like five other times.
Well, it's never, been down, but this has never been a double digit loss, but only five other times going back to the 1930s have both of them been negative even in the same year. So for this to occur is quite, quite a surprise to a lot of investors.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing to understand about this is, you know, like they call it the Fed put or whatever you want to phrase you want to use, but so another concept around money is when interest rates are rising, so most people are aware the Fed has been raising rates this year, existing fixed income investments, generally their price goes down. So we had some of the basically the fastest increase or one of the fastest increases ever of the Fed rate this year, and the result was massive declines in existing fixed investments, right? And the longer term the fixed income investment has, so in this example, long-term bonds, 20-year bonds, the more they're affected, right?
Right.
So if, like Brent was saying, if it's a shorter-term bond, they don't have as, it's still impacted, but not to that degree. And the way you want to think about it is the quicker that the term is up, so if you own a bond and the term's going to be up in a year, well, you know you're getting your money back in a year, so changes in interest rates aren't going to affect it as much. But if you're not getting your money back for 20 years and all of a sudden the rate's higher, it can really hit.
Have a lot bigger impact. Yeah, and so investors, what you were talking about with the Fed put, investors just got used to the fact that when stocks would fall sharply, that the Fed would rescue them by lowering interest rates. And that has happened, right, in this post-2008 era.
Yeah.
A lot of that had occurred. Well, last year, the Fed prioritized inflation a lot more than that. So inflation was really high, so they were trying to control that by raising rates, right? Well, what was also going on is the stock market was going down, so there was no rescue here this time. And so it's just always good to think and remember that, you know, just because something hasn't happened before doesn't mean that it can or it won't.
Yeah, and I think one of the best lessons is just because that happened, last year doesn't mean your investment plan is failing. Like, it's really important to know when you watch these things and you learn these lessons that your plan could be very solid long term. That doesn't mean bad things don't happen in the short term.
Right.
I mean, you could be in great physical shape. That doesn't mean you couldn't, you know, tear your ACL or, you know, or blow out an Achilles.
Right.
You didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but you had a bad outcome in the short term. And that's a really good lesson out of that.
You know, I know it always seems like a compliance thing, but they always say, you know, past performance is not indicative of future results, but it's so true. And we learned that last year and it taught us that lesson. So it's really interesting to look back at how everything performed. All right, what's lesson number two?
So number two is gold is not an inflation hedge over your lifetime or investment horizon, and neither is Bitcoin. So those are the two things that kind of came up recently. And when markets go down, that's a hot. Those are things that are hot topics, right?
Yes, but I mean, I have Sirius XM radio, like, and I mean, they are beating this gold hammer on there all the time. I mean, and we, you know, we hear about this over and over and over again, and a lot of it is tied to that, like, oh, it's this hedge against inflation, like, you know, the monetary system's going to collapse or whatever it may be. And so I think this is a really good lesson that everybody should hear. So gold ended 2020 at $1,894. Okay.
Yep.
So many investors were concerned at that time about inflation because of a lot of stimulus and low interest rates at that time. And a lot of people looked towards gold to hedge inflation during that period of time. And then, so that was in 2020. Through November of 2022, gold was down to 1824. So it had lost value over that period of time, and resulting in a negative 3.7% return. But inflation was up 14% over that period of time. So over that short period of time when inflation was quite high, gold lost its purchasing power by 17%. So there's a pretty good example where it's not hedging inflation.
Yeah, I think that people have this idea that every time something, some financial strain happens in the world, that gold's the answer.
Right.
And, you know, and it's just not necessarily the case. Like, if you take a longer period of time, because people could say, oh, that's cherry picking.
Right.
Right. So if you go, like, let's look at January of 1980, gold was at $850. Think about that for a minute. It was at $850 in 1980.
Right.
And it's around $1,900 today. That should tell you something. That's not a whole lot of growth over that many years. But anyway, in 2002, gold was down to $293. 22 years. Right? So the same, that same period, and this is kind of normal. Inflation average 3.9. That's a little bit higher than the long-term average, but 3.9% per year. So over that 22-year period, gold actually lost 85% of its real purchasing power, and that's a long period of time.
Yeah, 22 years.
Like, if you take a couple of years, you could argue, yeah, that's a little anomaly, right? You know, there's other factors. But when you start stretching out the time frame, and that's what's really tough about gold, is like when the returns do come, they come really quick.
Right.
Like, you'll get it in like a year, and then they will do nothing for years and years after that.
Yeah. I mean, it's very evident if you ever just Google a gold chart, and you can see that. So what Larry says too, and he's totally right, gold might protect against long-term inflation, right? But long-term is 100 years to Larry, right? And most of our investment horizons are nowhere, I mean, are not anywhere near that. Like, people think a long time might be a couple of years or even 10 or 20 is not a long term. And like you were just talking about, Dan, gold is really volatile over short periods of time. And so to get just inflation for a really volatile investment really doesn't make a lot of sense. There was a study that I've read quite a few different places that an economist went back and looked at what Roman soldiers were paid in gold, right? And they related that to what U.S. soldiers are paid today, and it's pretty much about the same amount, right? So it does keep up with inflation over, I mean,
really
a long hundreds of years. But in the short term, it's just not going to do that for you.
Well, and I think a lot of it too, just, and I don't want to belabor it, but it does get pushed hard by the media, but you always have to look at the sources of where this push is coming from. Like Brent, you said SiriusXM. Why would somebody pay to advertise that this is the solution for everything?
Maybe there's a large commission or something involved in that. I don't know. That's the reality. I'm speculating. Right.
The reality is that you do have to understand that people are, you know, naturally tied to gold because it's something you can hold in your hand. It's shiny and be like, oh, it's gold. But you know, from an investment perspective, it's not great. But it's easy to sell,
right?
Because people have that underlying feeling that oh, it's great. What about Bitcoin?
Well, then I mean, and I think this is. I think it's important to say this part is just that, you know, we talk about like evidence-based investing. This is pretty new, right? Cryptocurrency hasn't been around for that long, and it's really difficult to have long track records, and there aren't any, right? And so, but as a Bitcoin, because it is, has a fixed supply, right? A lot of people that support Bitcoin have said it's a really good hedge against inflation because of that very reason. Well, Bitcoin ended 2021 at around $46,000 per coin. It ended 2022, so a year later, it was at $16,000.
Yep.
That's a lot. I mean, inflation increased at 6.5%, and Bitcoin fell 70%.
Yeah.
Right. So it didn't, when you really needed it to hedge inflation, it just didn't do it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's 1 year, but that's pretty telling.
Well, I was at a conference speaking of Bitcoin last week, and Ken French, you can look him up, pretty famous microeconomist. Yes. He just did a huge project on cryptocurrencies, and he said the true issue lies in the fact that nothing backs it. So he's like, you know, what you have to always understand with any investment, if there's nothing tangible behind it, it can be extremely volatile and extremely risky. You know, and so like he said, the example was the U.S. dollar is backed by treasuries,
right?
Bitcoin is backed by nothing. And so the only thing changing its price is what someone else is willing to pay you for it.
Right.
And so regardless of the supply, you know, and he said too, who knows where it's going to go? Like nobody really knows that. But it's risky when you factor those things in.
Yeah, plenty of risk, no question about it. And then there's also pretty strong evidence that gold doesn't hedge inflation over short periods of time. So really good lesson there, number two. What is another lesson we learned from the market in 2022?
Yeah, this is a great one because I think it affects all of us. I think it's almost impossible to insulate yourself from this. Be aware of recency bias. So what's recency bias?
Well, it's just looking at what has recently happened and think that that's going to continue to happen, right? It's like, oh, this is going to, you know, and historically, investors tend to buy yesterday's winners and sell yesterday's losers. So, like, they're making reactions based on what has just occurred. That's recency bias, right?
Yeah, right. And, you know, it's funny, back to, like, what Ken French said last week, which I loved. He said, you know, people struggle with tents, and he's not talking about a tent you sleep in. He's talking about tense, like past tense, present tense, future tense. And he said, people tend to say things like, this investment is doing well. And his response was, that's impossible because the investment could have done well, but we don't know what it's going to do from this point in time moving forward, right?
Right.
And that's just a great way to think about it, is that no investment is doing well.
Right.
It's all about what's already happened.
It's already done.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's what we're talking about, though, with recency bias, right? We just see that, and we're like, oh, it's doing great. You know, I want to get in on this.
Yes. Yep. And we all know that ahead of time, right? Like, everybody knows that you're not supposed to, you know, buy things that are high.
Right.
Right? You're supposed to sell things that are high. But that's not how it works, because we don't want to miss out on what might happen because of what has already occurred, right? And it's just interesting. And so that's really well documented. Morningstar fund investor did a study. It's older, but it's in 2005, and they studied 17 different fund categories. And what they found was that the investors' returns were in all 17 of those categories, the investors' actual returns were less than what the funds themselves had provided.
Yeah. So people ask, how can that be? If you own this fund, how can you get a different return? because you don't own it for enough time.
Right.
Like people buy in when things are going well, they sell when they're going down. And in what we're talking about is that just because something just went down doesn't mean it won't go up in the future. We don't know this.
Right.
Right. But we react because we think it's prudent because we're factoring things on recency.
Right.
And putting more weight towards the things that just happened.
I mean, we all know that the buying low and selling high is the right thing to do. So why do you think this is occurring?
Well, I mean, I just think it's good to look at, and we talk to a lot of 401k participants and things like that, and how they pick their investments is a lot of times they'll look at, well, I want to get this fund because, well, look at the last five year return on this fund is great, mm-hmm. right? That's how they're picking them. And it's because they want that return. Well, yep. That's already occurred, right? So that's the one that they pick. And then the returns aren't as good as that they thought. So it's gone back down. And then they sell it and look for the other one that had just recently done well.
Yeah.
And then it's just rinse and repeat.
Well, and I mean, if you really think about this, it's kind of a subset of why we have recency bias, because we as human beings have a desire to like have certainty in our future. Like we all do, right? And so why, you know, we laugh at things like going to a fortune teller, right? Or why are people so attached to that stuff? Because they want to know, right?
Right.
Even though it's,
yeah,
it's laughable, right?
Right?
When you think about it for the most part. But it's the same thing with this. It's like, well, I want to get a good return. So looks like that's the way to go.
Yeah.
You know, who would buy one that had done poorly?
Right.
But the truth is we don't know. And by the way, the one that has done well could do well in the future.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. It could continue to do that or it might have a setback, but I mean, that's kind of the point here.
Yeah. And one of the things Larry says, and I think it's a great thing to remember, is great returns. If you have a good run of returns in some part of the market or some fund, what it does is actually lowers future expected returns because it's the law of averages.
Right.
I think that's a great lesson. And if something's done poorly, generally speaking, their future returns are going to be brighter, their expected returns, because the fact that the prices are down in that part or that asset class. And so it's counterintuitive, but it's funny because it's how we do everything else.
Yeah.
Like we go to buy stuff at the store. If we see a sale on something we've really wanted, that's the time to buy.
Right.
And if something's at the top, like it's around Christmas, and like I remember a couple of years ago, PlayStation 5s came out. You couldn't get them, right? So you'd be mm-hmm. online and they'd be like $1,000, right? Twice as much or maybe even more than that than what they were supposed to sell for. There were people that bought them, but a lot of people were like, doing that.
Yeah, you're crazy. I'm not
buying. I'm just going to wait.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
That is really interesting. All right. That brings us to number four here. Diversification. That's as important as ever.
Yeah. That's in this lesson, and this is the financial media. Like they always try to make it. They hate, first of all, let's back up. The financial media hates boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they want your eyes.
Yeah.
Right?
So like
in your ears.
That's why you get all these, well, now you should do this because they want to keep you engaged. But some of the rules don't change that much, do they?
No. No. And that's a great point. Like since really this idea since the Great Recession has been that diversification is dead, right?
Right.
Because a lot of the asset classes, riskier asset classes, were really highly correlated during that period of time, meaning they all went down, right?
Yeah.
They all did. And so the media is like, oh, well, that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because like if you listen to people like Larry and some of the experts that have studied markets forever, it doesn't mean things can't move in similar directions. I mean, it's dissimilar price movements. So dissimilar price movements, what that means is that if U.S. stock markets go up 20% in a given year, international might only go up 10%. They both went up.
Right.
So they went the same direction, but they were dissimilar from the standpoint that one moved more than another. Right. Right?
Yep.
And our research and Larry's research shows that's pretty consistent, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that premise is that like this world is so connected, right, that it doesn't matter if you have international stocks or emerging market stocks. In U.S. stocks, like we're a global economy,
right.
Like everything moves the same. Well, since 2000, only four times in those 23 years was there a difference in the S&P 500 in the IFA, which is the international index, that was less than 5%.
So basically what you're saying is that even though they may have been moving in similar directions, their returns were at least 5% different.
Yes, yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah. So only four times were they so close that they were within 5 percentage points.
Yeah.
And in the same period of time, 13 years, the difference was greater than 8%.
That's the definition of dissimilar price movement.
Right. And it gets even more dramatic when you look at the S&P versus emerging markets. So there were 8 years when the gap was at least 20%. So 8 of the 23, it was at least 20. And the largest gap was in 2009, the gap between those. The emerging markets beat the S&P 500 in that year by 53%.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing is like if you understand stock and owning companies, like it doesn't really matter where a company exists. Over long periods of time, the returns are similar, right? You're going to get, and they can vary. There's different rules. We don't want to get into all that. But the point is, let's just take the premise that they're similar. And you know that if I hold emerging markets for 20 years, I hold U.S. stocks for 20 years, I own non-U.S. stocks for 20 years, they're all going to get a somewhat similar return. That's the whole point of diversification. Yes. Is that each year you're trying to flatten out the massive ups and downs.
Right.
And so it does help.
And you're going to capture each one of those returns over that period of time, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're jumping in and out because of what you think, and that's what we were talking about before, is like you can't be jumping in and out thinking, well, the S&P did really good last year, so it's going to do really good this year. You know, it's the same kind of concept. So that's why it's so critically important to have all of those in a very structured manner.
Yeah, and I'm going to comment. So anybody listening that thinks, man, I don't know why I do that, some of the smartest people in the world that run these massive pension plans do this, where they move, oh, we're going to up our percentage of this part of the world or market. We're going to lower this part because we think this and we think that. They're all predictions.
Right.
And every time you insert another change in your portfolio or your investment plan, you're opening yourself up to more negative outcomes. And, you know, it's like people can't help themselves.
Right.
And the media pushes and everything else. So diversification works. It's not always going to get you the best return in a given year. Matter of fact, it's guaranteed to not. There's always going to be something that does better than your diversified portfolio. And there's going to be something that does worse, right?
Yep.
And that's the point of it. So I think it's really a good lesson.
All right. That brings us to our last lesson. What is the fifth and final lesson the market taught us in 2022?
So Dan was just hitting on this, is ignore market forecasts from so-called gurus.
I want to be a guru.
Well, I don't. I mean, when you hear how wrong these people are, you're not going to want to be a guru.
I just like the term. I mean, it sounds cool.
Yeah, so, you know, market forecasters every year continue to say, well, this is what the market's going to return in, you know, 2023. They're out there right now, right?
Yeah.
So everybody has their opinion of what the future holds. In December of 2021, Reuters did a poll. 45 market strategists were asked to predict what was going to happen to the S&P in 2022. In the median was a 7.5% return is what they thought. So they were only off by 28%.
So what the thing is that you think about, I've looked at these because it's kind of entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen them predict a negative year. Hmm. I mean, it's rare.
Yeah.
It's rare.
Well,
and I mean,
I haven't looked at a lot of them this year,
yeah.
But I kind of wonder because we talked about recency bias. And so like these people are subject to that as well. So
yeah.
Like I do read something, I'm not going to mention who they are, but like I do read several different economists and input. And there's one in particular that's extremely negative right now that I don't even want to read anymore because it's so negative.
Yeah.
But that's the point, is like he's stuck in the fact that all this stuff has happened.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, it's going to continue forever.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, like it's not going to continue.
Well, forever. And I think a good example that just to kind of side note on this is that so forecasts are not right and they don't track them. But I could tell you if they did, they'd be as good as you and I. Any of us could just guess, right? But when you look at these things, like last year, if you, this is why it's so hard to try to market time and pick things. Last year, the economy, even though we had rising rates, did quite well, right?
Yeah.
GDP growth, all these different things, right? The markets, though, don't care necessarily what's happening today. They care what they think as a whole, you know, market participants, what might or should happen or most probably will happen in the future. So like the rising rate of the Fed scared people, made everybody think the market is overvalued, pushed it way down. Well, now the market, you know, we hit that low point, right? So right now, a lot of people think we might be in a recession. Well, why is the market up this year?
Yeah, because it's forward-looking.
It's forward-looking. And that's another reason that predictions, like you could predict that you think the market's going to do well, like in 2022, because you felt like everything was going in a good direction, but you don't know all these other things that are going to occur. And now this year, like you said, you could predict it's going to be bad because, you know, all these bad things have, like, rates have gone up and people think we're going into recession. That might not happen.
Right.
And right now it's proven against it, but who knows how the year will end.
Right. But I think when you look at it from a long-term standpoint, like, it's too bad that they don't have these forecasters say, what do you think is going to happen over the next 10 or 20 years?
Yeah.
Like, that should be the question. Not, like, who cares? Honestly,
you don't invest for 1 year.
Yeah, if you do, you're doing it wrong, first of all. Like, it's not how you do. So this, I don't know how to say that name.
Jason Zweig.
Zweig, financial columnist for the Wall Street Journal, said, which, you know, so he's involved in this. He's, you know, he's a writer, right?
Yeah.
Whenever some analyst seems to know what he's talking about, remember that pigs will fly before he'll ever release the full list of his past forecasts, right? So, I mean, because the reason is that if they held people accountable, you'd never get any eyes in it on it because they're wrong.
Well, the thing is, they're never right. In what I mean by that is, even if they happen to pick the return for that year, it wasn't because they knew that was going to happen. It was a guess.
Right.
It was a guess. So, like, the thing is like, I can go on, you know, a multiple choice test and guess B on every answer and get so many of them right. That doesn't mean I knew.
Have you done that before?
I can neither confirm nor deny that's ever occurred. But you get the point.
Listen, like, if you don't go into a test with a strategy, if I don't know the answer, I'm answering B or whatever, then you really are, you know, at least you have a percentage.
You got a plan.
You got math on your side a little bit.
That's right.
If you just pick the same one every time.
That's right. You know, but that's the point is that the forecast, nobody knows the future, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason that stocks do return a higher return over time because of the uncertainty. But, you know, like you said, the press wants to know, so they ask all these people.
Yeah, that's funny. You know, it's a great kind of look back to them. I mean, there's so many good lessons from 2022, and I know a lot of people probably want to forget all about last year, but there are some things to learn, and I'm glad we were able to do that today. So let's just take a few minutes here to summarize things before we close out.
Yeah, Ben, I think you're right. I mean, I think a lot of us do want to forget it, but I think it's important that we don't, you know, repeat the same mistakes over and over. And so I think it's really important to always look back. Everybody makes mistakes, right? It's the people that continue to make them that never get ahead. And so 2023 is going to teach us some new lessons. That's undoubtable. But what we want to do is make sure that we realize that probably a lot of these have already been taught. And if we go back and look at the history of the market, there's tons of lessons that we can always learn there. Investors, instead of focusing on all of that noise, need to focus on the things that they can control, like how much they're either contributing or spending out of their portfolio. Make sure that you are in a well-diversified, thought-out investment portfolio that's geared towards your overall financial goals. And so, as always, if you need any help with that type of thing, we always recommend that you see a certified financial planner, and we're always here and available to answer your questions.
Absolutely. That phone number, 517-783-1695, or you can find Dan and Brent online at averywealth.com. All right, well, we can officially put a bow on 2022, I guess, with today's episode. So guys, thanks as always for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Avery Wealth, Inc. is a registered investment advisor registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration as an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training, and the content of this communication has not been approved or verified by the SEC or by any state securities authority. The information contained in this podcast is intended to provide general information about Avery Wealth and its services. It is not intended to offer investment advice. Investment advice will only be given after a client engages our services by executing the appropriate investment services agreement. Information regarding investment products and services are provided solely to read about our investment philosophy and our strategies. You should not rely on any information provided on our website in making investment decisions. Market data, articles, and other content in this podcast are based on generally available information and are believed to be reliable. Avery Wealth does not guarantee the accuracy of the information contained in this podcast. Avery Wealth will provide all prospective clients with a copy of our current form ADV Part 2A disclosure brochure prior to commencing an advisory relationship. However, at any time, you can view our current form ADV Part 2A at advisorinfo.sec.gov. In addition, you can contact us to request a hard copy.